From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast, is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold-Blooded, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern. Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one case, but almost a dozen. Listen to Cold-Blooded, the Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi guys, Nancy Grace here, host of podcast Crime Stories with Nancy Grace. I've dedicated my life to fighting crime and helping crime victims. For a decade, I prosecuted violent felonies. Every day is a mission. Every day is a chance to stop crime and keep one more person safe. Listen to Crime Stories with Nancy Grace on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.
From UFOs to psychic powers and government conspiracies, history is riddled with unexplained events. You can turn back now or learn the stuff they don't want you to know. A production of iHeartRadio.
Hello, welcome back to the show. My name is Matt.
My name is Noel.
They call me Ben. We're joined, as always, with our super producer, Paul Mission Control Deccans. Most importantly, you are you. You are here. That makes this the stuff they don't want you to know. It's a interesting time to be alive. There's a lot of scuttlebutt going on the surface and in the waves and indeed in space. We're going to learn about potassium. We might get some good news about some of our favorite pets. We're going to have some conversations about Star Wars. We're going to drink a little Faygo. But before we do any of that, we received, as we mentioned in an earlier episode this week, we received a lot of fascinating correspondence about chaos in Earth orbit.
That's right. And this one comes to us from the Cold War Hammer. Let's jump right in. I'd love to hear your commentary on the news that dropped this week that Russia is developing a nuclear-capable ASAT weapon platform. The way in which this is being reported has me sort of scratching my head. Seems like there was an emergency briefing in Washington about it. So that tells me that officials care about it and think that it's an urgent issue. Then John Kirby goes out of his way to make some statements to reassure the public, which I would paraphrase as, quote, this technology definitely has not yet been deployed, and this weaponry definitely would not be able to nuke people on Earth. I'm serious, guys. Why would you ever think that? The idea of using nukes to destroy satellites seems sort of overkill, doesn't it? Wouldn't that be like using a 10-pound sledgehammer to kill an ant? I don't get it. Also, thanks to the movie Gravity, we all know that breaking satellites into many tiny pieces that will continue to orbit Earth is generally not a great thing for any nation interested in space operations. So again, why? This leads me to a deeper question, maybe another time. Is Russia really a relevant threat to Western nations this day and age? The war in Ukraine has shown the world that their military is not the mighty Cold War era behemoth that it used to be. If it was, then that war would have been over many, many months ago. And I'm editorializing here, like Putin indicated, you know, early on. He said it was going to be a one and done, quickie kind of operation. Proved not to be the case. Part of me seriously wonders if our government uses the 70 plus year old notion of Russia as being a super unhinged, dangerous, technologically advanced superpower as a baseline or easy fallback justification for the continued excessive dumping of taxpayer funds into our military. A boogeyman, if you will. F-35s, anybody? If you don't end up covering this, please tell Josh and Chuck that they should do a short stuff on ASAT technology. If you choose to read this on your podcast, otherwise you could refer to me as the Cold War Hammer.
Boom.
Which we did. I think this is just such a great piggyback on the episode that we just did about spy satellites. It came up a little bit. We talked a decent amount about what nukes would do in space and about how there are a lot of questions around what that behavior might look like. But I think Cold War Hammer raises several really great questions, and I think we should maybe get to them one at a time. What would a quote-unquote ASAT device in space need with nuclear technology? Is that overkill, as he mentioned? I think the answer is probably yes, it is overkill. Is there a more measured approach to using this technology to interfere and or destroy satellites that maybe wouldn't cause the kind of space debris that would clog up the works for everybody?
Yes.
Yeah.
Kinetic satellite, anti-satellite technology. Just smash them into each other.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but that you'd have the same resulting problem, I think.
With things that, getting dislodged and, yeah, I mean.
I want to say, guys, just shut down the ability for that satellite to communicate somehow.
That's a good way. You could silence it if you can't destroy it. You could also, if you could somehow render it incapable of correcting its own orbit, then it would
drift, become less useful,
eventually reach decay.
Or just push it, right?
Yeah.
Like a bully on the playground.
Here's the proposition, though, and this is increasingly, we didn't mention this on the episode, but this is increasingly what I suspect may be part of the calculus, and I'm just guessing here. So usually when countries have nuclear capability, whether that's in a submarine like the Ohio class, whether that's in a silo, et cetera, it's not actually meant to be used. It's meant to exist as a deterrence. Therefore, we could say that part of the calculus here may be just to have that thing in the sky, let it be known as an open secret that you do have that capability. Now, is that a good idea? I don't think so. But I also, you know, if I were at the table in Moscow, I would say it's not a good idea to invade Ukraine. I'm just saying, Putin doesn't really answer my emails. I don't think he does email.
I don't think he does email. He's probably still using like some sort of encrypted BlackBerry. So the Kirby in question in Cold War Hammer's email is John Kirby, the spokesperson for U.S. National Security Council. And he was responding to this briefing that took place. He didn't. There's actually a pretty good Axios article about this by Jacob Knudsen. And he, let's see, in the article, he kind of breaks down the what, when, where, why, and how of it all. He says, Kirby would not disclose the specific capabilities of the weapon and would not say whether the U.S. has or is developing a defense strategy against it. But some media outlets reported Wednesday that the weapon is, quote, nuclear capable. However, Kirby didn't confirm if that description applied to the ASAT, but he did note that the term can actually have several meanings. Like nuclear submarines, for example, mm-hmm. which can launch nuclear weapons and also use nuclear power as a source of propulsion.
So it's like the dual use conundrum, because nuclear capable could also mean that the satellite somehow just has non-offensive nuclear capability, right?
That's right.
And the other thing is, you could, for all the world, you could make it look like you were launching some kind of nuke into space, but it could be a dummy warhead, because it'd be very difficult to get in and verify what's actually under the hood, you know? So, I mean, there are calculations to it. There's also this idea of a ticking time bomb. To be clear, as we record right now, the intel is not that this has been launched. The intel is that there are significant breakthroughs or steps forward into the ultimate mission of launching something. But it's very, I love this point, Cold War Hammer, because it is easy to be hyperbolic about these claims, but it's also, unfortunately, we have to remember that sometimes these guys are talking to the U.S. public. Often they're talking in a couple of different levels. And a lot of what Kirby is saying is meant to be heard by Moscow and Petersburg.
Right, exactly. Like, again, some of the stuff we were talking about in the spy satellite episode, where a lot of this stuff is about optics and about perhaps subterfuge by, you know, putting out a release about one thing so that they think that's what's going on, and then there's really other stuff going on behind the scenes, or, as you said, under the hood.
And he's not being squirrely for fun. He's not being squirrely just for, like, giggles and pranks. As we've discussed before, part of the reason they can't say a lot about how they know this stuff is that it's going to compromise how they got it, their collection methods.
That's right.
And unfortunately, and a lot of people don't like to hear this, but it's very, very true. Unfortunately, when there was such heavy compromise of intel during the Trump administration, a lot of the old school assets that were already increasingly irrelevant, to be honest with you, were burned. So now those collection methods are a much higher percentage than previously is now signals intelligence instead of on the ground like human assets, which is overall a good thing for the safety of those people.
For sure. And Kirby also went on to say that the U.S. has known about this weapon for, quote, many, many months, if not a few years. Mm-hmm. But that in recent weeks, the intelligence community has been able to zero in with a bit higher degree of precision in order to assess the ways in which Russia might deploy such a weapon.
Mm-hmm. So I want to stick on nuclear propulsion for a moment.
Yeah. Sure.
Because my mind goes back to 2017, 2018, when Russia comes out and says, hey, we've got this new type of cruise missile that actually has a nuclear power plant inside it.
Mm-hmm.
And it can go up to 10 times the distance that general cruise missiles could travel because of its power source. And they came out and said that they tested those weapons, at least allegedly, and it feels like maybe they could be trying the same kind of thing with a rocket or with a system that is meant to be placed in space and then move around like a nuclear submarine. They had nuclear powered aircraft in design phase, right, as well as the United States
and the U.S. and I almost said the Russians.
Grace.
That's a little bit paranoid.
Yeah.
The U.S. and the USSR also previously, you guys know, they launched nuclear powered and nuclear electric powered satellites. That's already been a thing.
Well, my question, though, is if there is a missile that, while maybe not carrying a nuclear payload, but does have nuclear technology aboard to help with the distance, for a thing that's designed to make impact and go boom, wouldn't that also create a nuclear event?
Unless that's not what it's designed for.
Okay.
What if it's closer to the X-37B kind of technology that's meant to have a propulsion system that is long-lasting and stable that could stay in orbit for a long, long time?
And also, if you are militarily outmatched, you're going to lean harder into the bluffs. And
case in point, with
for
all
many
of these
generations, yes. I've been in some weird conversations about nuclear capability, and right now the biggest question the West has about Russian nukes is how many actually work, because it's not set it and forget it like that made for TV rotisserie chicken cooker. It takes so much constant maintenance of all these other systems to keep a nuke working just on the surface, sitting there. So there are serious questions about the deliverables or the capabilities.
Well, the UK famously in the news this week failed a Trident missile test again.
Mm-hmm. The thing people are concerned about, and the reason these concerns are valid to some of your questions there, Cold War Hammer, It's primarily two things. It's the ability to somehow shut down satellite comms, satellite networks, which again is a quick ticket to the dark ages if things go wrong. And secondly, related to that, it's what we have talked about, the Kessler syndrome. The Kessler syndrome is the feedback loop of space debris.
Yeah.
So, like, let's say it doesn't have a nuclear warhead, but it has the ability to switch or reposition itself such that if it wanted, it could knock the right NRO satellite out of the sky. When it does that, even if it's not nuclear power, it's going to vastly increase the amount of space debris, which spreads over time, which poses an existential threat to
everybody.
Satellite. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's kind of, I don't know, it remains to be seen, but I do appreciate Kirby at least publicly saying, guys, don't don't immediately go to some sci-fi nuke from space thing.
Yeah.
But there's a scary part to that, which they didn't say out loud, which is you don't need a nuclear weapon to screw things up.
I just got this very clear image in my mind of competing space forces and everybody, the only way to feasibly take action against any enemy combatant satellites or vehicles is to nudge them towards the Earth so that they won't explode, they won't break apart, they will just go into the Earth.
Change their trajectory just enough. Yeah.
It's basically super sophisticated bumper cars that are trying to nudge each other and all the satellites. But what if, like, think about that, the end game of that scenario.
Yeah.
One state power is able to, in one swoop, take out all of the primary, let's say, NRO satellites or the primary spy satellites that China controls. And they're able to nudge them all down to where nobody really understands what's going on until they realize, oh, wait, it's the altitude is falling on like all of our satellites simultaneously. And then it's over. Nobody, you can't see anything. You're in the dark now.
Mm-hmm.
That is, especially given what happened with the AT&T this week as we're recording.
Highly disruptive. Yeah.
Yeah. There's also, which now current guess, by the way, just to clear it up for everybody, it's not a solar flare. I really thought it was that for a minute. Yeah, it's not. It might be something, might be a fumble on Cisco's part because they're a huge piece of that infrastructure. But with this, with your idea, satellites failing, that is the concern. That is why the U.S. and Russian diplomats are currently engaged in what corporate America would call healthy conversations. That's why the Biden administration reached out to India and China and these other world space powers and said, hey, help us stop Russia from deploying or launching whatever this thing may be, because if you game it out to a dystopian level, then what you know is that if satellites go down, or if there is, like, if you detonate a nuke in space, there's a massive electromagnetic pulse.
Wow.
It'll kill the birds. And so,
that's okay.
Yeah. Well,
I'm just kidding.
Birds as satellites. It'll kill the satellites. And if that happens, then anything that is not what we call a hardened target is basically toast. In a very bad, undelicious way, toast with no butter.
Well, the Biden administration, actually, after Russia tested a satellite launch, I believe, in 2021, vowed that we would no longer conduct such tests that would add to the space debris problem. Mm-hmm. And also acknowledged that we do have similar ASAT-type weapons to what's being discussed here.
Yes. And the one thing I do want to, it's a scary thing, but it's necessary to say. If you knew in advance that something like this would happen, you would be able to prepare things a little bit better than your adversaries. And that means that in the land of the blind, the one-eyed man is king, as things go. And in that ensuing chaos, especially given how reliant modern militaries are on this technology, in that ensuing chaos, you could take a Donbass, you know? You could get a Crimea, and you could do it pretty quickly.
I thought you were making another reference to Boss and...
Boss.
What is it? The two rappers, the British rappers, old guys.
Oh,
awesome.
Pete and Boss.
Pete and Boss.
Yeah, you could know that. Don Boss, they call him. Yeah. No, I mean, it's something to think about. We're not saying that's happening, but it is something to keep an eye on. Now, is a nuclear weapon in space overkill? Yeah.
Yeah.
Is that the point, though?
Probably.
But on the moon, though, guys, right?
Oh, boy. Well, you know, one thing we mentioned in the episode we just did on spy satellites is this 1967 Outer Space Treaty. And putting a space nuke up there would, in fact, be a violation of said treaty. Russia supposedly is in observance with this treaty. And just last thing.
We violated the treaty.
No. Problem with space junk is just going to get worse as private industry, you know, continue to launch things into space. And it can cause that bumper car problem that you're talking about, Matt. And it could potentially make it prohibitively difficult to launch any kind of satellites into space with predictable outcomes because of how much garbage is just floating around there and could potentially nudge your stuff off course. Because again, because of the conditions of space, a little nudge is all it would take to totally throw everything off kilter and cause it to no longer be effective at what it's supposed to do.
What's that vocabulary word again? The something effect that you mentioned?
Kessler.
Kessler effect. Ugh.
Well, I think that's a really solid. Oh, I was gonna, last thing. I want to hear this from you guys both really quickly before we end. The idea of Russia as a boogeyman, is it relevant anymore like it used to be? Are we using it as an excuse to dump taxpayer money into military operations, or is there a real threat?
Both. You can, por que no los dos? Like, you can have both of those because that's something we mentioned at the end of the episode, too. Like, it's quite advantageous for national defense companies to. They make money off fear.
The folks at the Project for New American Century lamented the fact that USSR was gone and we needed a new enemy back in 2000. And when we got one, it was just amorphous and a concept, right? Terror. Oh, what's that? Weird.
Yeah, well, there was a war on it, apparently.
But now we've got two opposing potential, like, what do we call it? Hegemons? I think you're right. Ben is correct. It's both things simultaneously.
That seems right to me as well. Well, thank you, Cold War Hammer, for that illuminating email. We're going to take a quick break, hear a word from our sponsor, and then come back with more messages from you.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold-Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern.
It's just a shame, you know, that they took him from us.
Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, knocking on doors, uncovering new evidence, including the DNA of a potential killer.
My name is Danny Smith. I'm a detective with Miramar Police Department. This is Scott Weinberger. We're actually reopening an old case, and your name came up.
Untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one murder, but almost a dozen.
I thought they were going to kill me, so I kept my mouth shut, and I didn't say anything. All these years, I didn't say anything.
Listen to Cold-Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back. And guys, let's stay in, I guess it's not space. It's this. We're going to talk more aerial things, like phenomena. Let's hear this message. It's a bit long. It's a message from Sergeant Will, and this is his theory on the UAP phenomena, and it's related, I think, to the discussion we're having about nuclear capabilities.
Hey guys, what's up? It's Sergeant Will. I'm calling up because I wanted to discuss a theory that I have. It might sound kind of out there, but if you actually look at it, it's not really that far out there. So there was a documentary where there was a couple people talking about where UFOs would come down and do specific things to the nuclear weapons that the United States had. One came down and shut down all the nuclear weapons within the local silo in a secret location, rendering the systems inoperable during that time, and then turning them back on as it flew away. And then another one was from the Global Reconnaissance Office, you know, like the ones that have top secret clearance, cosmic top secret, that see everything that comes from outer space and stuff like that. What they were doing is they were launching a nuclear weapon test. And when they launched the nuclear weapon, the craft failed. So it took off and blew up, kind of like a SpaceX explosion type. And then when they looked at the footage to try to figure out what happened, they couldn't see it because it was too fast. But what happened was a small saucer-shaped ship came down and boom, hit it with a ray from one area, boom, went around it as it was launching to another area, and then boom, a third area, and shot a laser at it, and then flew away. After that third shot, the warhead was rendered inert, and the machine, you know, the rocket, was destroyed. So we're talking about our most advanced technology going into space, getting hit by something that can come down, orbit it, hit it with laser precision strikes, and then fly away. All right. So, yes, everyone's going to say, oh, yes, these are aliens and da 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 da. For me, that is too specific. For these things to come down and focus specifically on nuclear weapons, even if you have that type of technology, like, you don't need to worry about nuclear weapons. My opinion on this is that this is the pinnacle technology of the Star Wars program that we were working on under Ronald Reagan. It's an anti-nuclear war weapon. So the thing is, because the United States is the leading power in the world with regard to nuclear weapons, with Russia in second place, where I don't actually really believe that Russia has the capability that they talk about. So I would consider China more of a threat. You know, China's definitely a threat, but that's a different story. That's the cyber attack hacking type of stuff. But my issue is it's too specific. It's too direct. All right. So when these things come down, they are focused specifically on nuclear capabilities, nuclear attacks, or even including nuclear submarines and nuclear aircraft carriers. So if you listen to those guys that saw those things that were, you know, in squads, like multiple squadrons off of the coast of California, you know, with the Tic Tac footage, those things were in large numbers tracking our vehicles. And then they knew where the rendezvous points were. For that level of intelligence, even if you're an alien species, it's inconceivable that you'd, first of all, understand what we're saying. Second of all, know exactly where we're going to be. That is human intelligence. You couldn't calculate that with math. You couldn't calculate that with just understanding us. So that means that you would need to understand what we're thinking already. These things are man-made. These things are to make sure that we don't kill ourselves with nuclear fire. And the reason that it's top secret is because if we were to reveal that we have machines that can render nuclear weapons inert, then we lose our advantage as a nuclear power because we're the number one nuclear power in the world. So the leverage that comes with that would be immediately dissolved when the world would realize that we're all completely 100% safe from nuclear war. And that nuclear winter and nuclear war is never going to occur. And so that way we can have our enemies spending ridiculous amounts of money on nuclear weapons. Why would we worry about it? You know, but let them spend their money and let them weaken their economy doing such when we know that we can just completely stop it. You know, we're smart enough to create vehicles and machines that will make sure that the human race continues. even though it looks like an evil empire, that's why we are not really that worried about it. And that's why, you know, we don't really care about proliferation. So, I mean, it's a theory. Let's put it that way. It's my theory, and it's my theory based on what I've seen in the world at the capacity of being in top secret environments. You know what I mean? All right, man. Hope you guys have a good one. You guys are awesome.
Bravo. Wow. Bravo.
Yeah. Right? Well, I mean, it makes me think of like stuff you might read about in like fiction, like dystopian fiction, like 1984, where you have the threat of the thing that is what you base your entire strategy of control over the people on. And maybe the threat isn't even real, but like we were talking about, even with the Russia thing, it gives you a lot of power to wield over the populace. To have this perceived threat that only we can save you from.
Well, yeah, but in this case, it's weird because if you go along with Sergeant Will's theory, and thank you so much, Sergeant Will, for calling in before I jump back into this. That was three-minute voicemails that are like scrunched down into one.
Very, you very edited good. Those, so thank you, Sergeant Will, very much.
And Sergeant Will, if you are listening back, I don't remember saying it that way. I tried really hard to make sure I got like exactly what you were saying in there and didn't change what you were saying, but really scrunched it down. But what Sergeant Will is saying is that you can't ever let anyone know that you are the source behind this tech if it existed. Like, that to me was mind-blowing.
Yeah, but yes, there's lots to unpack here, and I'm really glad you took, thank you for your time, Sergeant. So we've talked about some of these things in the past. One of the big questions, right, the conundrum of deterrence is maintaining that value and that leverage, right? That value proposition, as they would say. However, there is something interesting that I'd love to explore, which is the human aspect,
yes.
The human intelligence aspect. So we know, for instance, like in efforts to stymie nuclear weaponization, we've seen things like Stuxnet. And Stuxnet relied on social engineering and it relied on human intelligence because those systems were air-gapped. So someone had to physically get something like a USB into that computer and hopefully get out, which we're pretty sure they did. But the idea then with human also brings an inherent vulnerability. And that vulnerability increases, exacerbates with each new operator you add. So if there is this top secret capability that'll make the world a safer place while also retaining U.S. position as the hegemon, then you have to be very buttoned up about how anybody involved with that operates, you know, and secrets are tough to keep. So if this is true, and this is a fascinating theory, if this is true, one of the first questions would be, how come no one has come forward? How come there has never been a Snowden, right? Some Assange purveyor of classified things. Is it just not existing on paper, never on the internet, just handshakes?
Well, what if people have? It's just they are not to be believed according to popular, you know, I mean, you hear an outlandish claim from somebody like Bob Lazar and you're like, oh, that can't be real. There's no way that's real. And there are reasons, as we've talked about on this show,
then you start
to see question
more to say people closer to the actual source come out and say, well, maybe there is some credence to that. Then it starts to feel a little more believable.
Yeah, but anybody who comes out and talks about it, who even testifies in front of Congress, gets put through the ringer
also
when it comes to like their credibility. And I don't know. I just feel like maybe there have been people who have come forward.
Ooh.
It's just who is going to believe.
And also consider this, like, just because. So what we're doing here, Sergeant, is we're taking this theory you gave us and we're sort of turning it around in a show and tell, just getting a shape of it and a sense of its dimensions. So lest we sound like we're poo-pooing it, which I don't think any of us are, I do want to point out this theory, even unproven, is so much more plausible than the idea of extraterrestrials specifically eliminating nuclear capability.
Yeah. Because it gives a reason, right? It gives a reason to develop that tech and to deploy it.
And to obscure it. And also all of the pieces described in this, I'm holding my hands out here as though it's a physical thing that I'm playing with. All the pieces described here on their own are proven to exist, with one exception, the nuclear shutdown capability. Mm. That's the only thing it's really asking us, other than the weakness of humans.
Well, two quick questions. One, is this tech so out of the realm of anything that we fully understand that we wouldn't even know what it might look like? Like, what would it take to have a tech that could literally counter a nuclear blast?
Well, in this case, what is being described, again, in we have to state this, in a documentary that was viewed by Sergeant Will that is then being used to develop this theory, right? Which are based on testimonials that we have seen, that we talked with Dr. Stephen Greer about the Disclosure Project and some of the officials that made statements in the year 2000, and I think 2001? I think it was 2001, because it was 2001, and who made disclosures about this exact activity with missile silos being targeted by whatever these things were that disabled nuclear weapons systems.
Which we have a video about. We have an episode about. We have a video about it that just came out on social media, I think.
Oh, yeah, we do. We absolutely do. Go check out Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube. I think you can find it on all those places.
Yeah, conspiracy stuff on YouTube, conspiracy stuff show on TikTok and Instagram.
Yes. Oh, shoot. I forgot where I was going here. But the point was...
The point was the shutting down this capability, right? What that tech would look like is one
yes.
of the questions.
So thinking about drone technology, we know of the drone technology very well that was deployed with operations in Afghanistan and Iraq in the early 2000s. We know very well the newer drone technology that's coming out. There was a recent statement by somebody that I clocked, but I cannot regurgitate what it was right now. It was about a new type of drone that somebody really high up in defense yes. talked about, like, oh, that's just the new class of drones.
And it came out because it's someone who had served, I think, in a UAP-related field for a while.
Yes.
And they were saying, look, it's not aliens. We looked into this. And this guy is, I'll get his name, but this guy is publishing a sort of, historic compilation of these activities that he's allowed to speak about now. And he said that the thing that pilots described that looked like roughly like a cube or maybe a dodecahedron or something that was surrounded in a transparent circle. He's saying that's the top level drone right now because they have more maneuverability.
Yes. I'm just remembering when we're talking about the testimony given at Congress where Ryan Graves, somebody who talked with Payne Lindsay on High Strange and somebody that we discussed in the past, that's the type of craft or a very similar description of the craft that he saw or the people who were working with him gave testimony about.
Yes. Yeah. And we're going to have to get this guy's name later, but we definitely both read the same testimony. And it is true. Look, a lot of times people might think it's a bummer to figure this stuff out, but a lot of these things are mundane. They can be explained by the need to obscure collection methods. They can be explained by the need to keep whatever edge one has over a rival military, regardless of how slim.
Dude, let's talk about the SDI. The Strategic Defense Initiative and Ballistic Missile Systems and Star Wars program that Sergeant Will mentioned.
Right, right.
This is 1984.
They've been working on it for a while.
The concept was to use ray guns, guys, like lasers and other high-powered energy weapons to disable nuclear missiles, even if, like, before they've been launched,
or
after they were launched.
Launch, yeah.
Like, it. And again, that's why Sergeant Will, I think, makes such a great point, saying this is the Star Wars program. In the 2000s.
That makes sense. Yeah. I mean, I do, again, think it's far more plausible than extraterrestrials having like a chip on their shoulder or on their tentacles specifically about nuclear power.
Well, I'm so sorry, Noel. You keep trying to talk. Wouldn't you test that on yourself before you tested it on an enemy combatant's nuclear weapons? Because think about what that, if it didn't work and you're targeting your enemy's nukes, about what that could trigger?
A massive chain reaction, like in terms of just mutually assured destruction. But what I was just going to mention was the thing I said at the top that maybe was jumping the gun a little bit, just the idea of how long the specter of nuclear war has been this thing, you know, for the world. Mm-hmm. The idea of like what that would be like and how that's where the power actually lies. What would it mean for the nature of warfare and relationships between countries that maybe don't get along so cozily if there were a known technology that would get rid of the specter of this big bad that's been hovering over everything for so long.
Then everyone would have to have that technology, right?
Yeah, you gotta keep up with the Joneses. And also there's the question of how long MAD will hold, how long that strategy, that calculation or philosophy will remain relevant. Because as we speak right now, there are a lot of, all right, don't laugh, but this is the real term, revolutions in military affairs called RMAs. Mm. So you'll hear people talking about like, oh, the RMAs are coming. There's a, you know, it's going to be difficult for NATO and Russia and China in particular. But what they really mean is they're talking in the long term about the evolution of breakthroughs in war. So like gunpowder, mm-hmm. use of cavalry, exactly. stuff like that. As soon as it became useful for that stuff to be public, as soon as the cost benefit swung just a little, then it instantly went public.
That's right.
Yeah.
So Sergeant Will is saying right now that switch hasn't occurred.
Sure. But we're on the cusp probably,
right? If there
right?
is a threat big enough where they say, okay, we're going to have to rapidly evolve. We're going to have to shut down MAD. We're going to have to throw MAD out the window because we have to stop an imminent nuclear disaster.
Oh,
then that's a calculation that people will have to make.
But this is the anti-threat, right? Like this is the antidote,
yeah.
you know, for this specter that we've been, you know, living in fear of. I mean, think how rarely nuclear bombs have actually been deployed, and yet it's this boogeyman that right. we all live in fear of the threat of.
But that's the thing, like when, so there's such an enormous cost if such a technology exists. Let's say something terrible goes wrong, Putin is no longer a rational actor, and the dead hand system is real, and the U.S. says, well, the only way we can stop this is we shut down all the dead hand nukes, and then everybody knows, and then what kind of crazy consequences are we going to face? Because people will say, why did you do this for centuries, you know? You can't fix the tax system, but
Ben,
you can shut down whatever.
Ben.
Yeah.
Or you say that it's not yours still. You say that it's some kind of extraterrestrial force that saved the Earth.
Very X-Files.
No, but not just X-Files, like unite the Earth
against
in
a new
an initiative
common,
against yes. whatever the thing is.
Because that's my point with all this crap that I've been talking. We need that threat to some degree. To get rid of that threat, it's such a sea change that it's going to have to be rethought. Mm. You know, otherwise, everything's going to be out of balance. Mm. We need to have a threat.
Oh, God, Ben, I can see that picture so clearly that you just painted with yeah. that moment.
I think that's happened in sci-fi. There has been like a sort of a false flag enemy, like extraterrestrial enemy that turns out wasn't real. I
well,
swear
yeah,
to
we
God.
We always talk about Watchmen. Watchmen. And,
that's what it was. Yeah, of course that's what it was. Yes, thank you. That's what yeah. it is. No spoilers. I mean, you still can. No, but that's exactly what
but
it is.
But that specific moment when the nukes are being launched, mm-hmm. right?
Well, in Watchmen, it wasn't a false flag. It was a manufactured actual catastrophe that they then blamed on this thing, but we actually did it ourselves, right?
But in this case, it would be benevolent forces from elsewhere.
I think that's incredible.
But it's actually the U.S. military.
Mm-hmm. It was the friends we made along the way.
Right.
Dude. Great sitcom idea.
Yes. All right, guys. That's it. Thank you so much, Sergeant Will, for sending us those messages. We really love the way you think and the way you speak. And anybody else who has ideas, give us a call. Our number is 1-833-STDWYTK. We'll be right back with more messages from you.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer? Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold-Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern.
It's just a shame, you know, that they took him from us.
Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, knocking on doors, uncovering new evidence, including the DNA of a potential killer.
My name is Danny Smith. I'm a detective with Miramar Police Department. This is Scott Weinberger. We're actually reopening an old case, and your name came up.
Untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one murder, but almost a dozen.
I thought they were going to kill me, so I kept my mouth shut and I didn't say anything. All these years, I didn't say anything.
Listen to Cold-Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We've returned. You can also send us an email directly. We read every single one we get, conspiracydieheartradio.com. Let's hold up some examples. Here's one that I thought would be interesting because I hadn't really thought about this. And I don't know if you guys have either. This comes to us from Iron Man. Iron Man, I love the way you write. You say the following. Hi, everyone. I know you're aware of the status of American heart health, and I appreciate that you took on Big Sugar a while back. That took chutzpah. What I want to offer to you is the opposite side of the same coin, potassium.
Hmm?
Potassium has been shown in long-term studies to have a significant effect on heart health. It's the electrolyte that no one seems to talk about in a meaningful way. Of course, the SAD is high in sodium, and potassium is like the yin to sodium's yang. The great problem, studies are showing, is not that American sodium levels are so high, but that American potassium levels are so low. So it might be editorializing here, might be looking at the problem from the wrong angle.
Mm.
Iron Man continues, a higher sodium diet is not inherently bad, but it becomes bad without proportionately high potassium levels. The recommended daily allowance, or RDA, of potassium is 4,700 milligrams. It's believed that less than 2% of Americans meet this number. I want to pause there because, I'm not a great example of an entity taking care of itself, but I've never thought about potassium levels.
Banana is literally the only thing I think about when I hear potassium. Mm-hmm.
I think about Kazakhstan because of Borat.
I also think exporter.
That it's one of the weirder periodic table symbols. It's K.
Yeah.
Nothing to do with potassium. It's probably a reference to its Greek name or something like that.
Where else do we get potassium in a diet?
Pills. People take supplements for it.
Oh, we have an answer at the end.
Okay.
So it's not all bad news. So at the same time, continues Iron Man, OTC, over-the-counter, potassium supplement regulations are so tight that you cannot get a meaningful supplement in stores. The maximum amount of potassium allowed in an OTC pill is 100 milligrams, and that's 2% of the recommended daily allowance.
What?
So you'd have to take a lot of that. I did not either. Iron Man says this is due to the adverse effects of high amounts of potassium for people with certain pre-existing health issues. While the reasoning for not allowing greater amounts is sound, it exacerbates this problem. People can take whatever multivitamin they want, but they'll always be missing out on this one incredibly crucial nutrient. Not only that, but the meaningless potassium supplements they allow to be put on the shelf and sold over the counter trick people into thinking they're meeting their needs. Watch out, Big Potassium. He's coming for you. Iron Man's on
this
the case.
This is intense.
It is.
This is a
lot. Are we all dreadfully lacking in potassium?
Maybe that's the source of all our problems.
Oh my God, you guys.
I thought I was just having a terrible time existing. Iron Man, whomever they may be, says, this is terrible, but not all that conspiratorial. That is, until you consider the unimaginable amount of money spent on heart-related health care in the U.S. I'm sure you've looked into that number, and it's growing, not shrinking. There is a cosmic level of financial motivation here. Could it be a happy coincidence for the American medical care scam? I mean, system. Maybe. Could it be an insanely deadly and wildly profitable conspiracy? Probably. Either way, I'm writing to you guys because you care about people. It's very kind.
About
trying to make a difference through the dissemination of important information. Conspiracy or not, this is a PSA that just hasn't gotten out there in a meaningful way. The number of lives it could save is like most of them. Anyways, I hope you all look into this because you've proven yourselves to be expert-level researchers. Love the show. Keep going. Thanks, Iron Man. P.S. In Iron Man's opinion, beans. To your question, Matt. Are the best shot at fixing this.
Really?
White beans especially.
What?
If you like a good white chili, that'll work. Other leafy greens like spinach and broccoli apparently contain some amount of potassium. Also potatoes and other lentils, which I'm a fan of. Legumes. Avocado also is really nice. And of course, the humble banana.
Humble radioactive banana.
No! I do have beef, and I think we all do, with the American healthcare system. But I will say, I get a decent amount of blood work done because of this thyroid condition that I have, so I have to get my levels checked pretty regularly. And I got a message from my doctor saying that my vitamin D levels were really bad.
Yeah.
It's probably because I don't go outside enough. But they prescribed me a prescription level supplement.
3,000 IUs? How many?
I don't recall. Okay. I don't recall. But my point is they are monitoring for that kind of stuff. Sure. And I would imagine that if my potassium levels were ridiculously low, they would have said something about that too.
Well,
but maybe not.
Maybe it's like order of operations.
That could well be.
Like, fix this, the D, then the K.
And the IC in the middle.
By the way, a PSA, guys, you know that stands for, right?
Vitamin D?
Potassium service announcement.
Worth it. Okay, I thought you were going blue.
Nope.
I respect it.
I went blue, secretly, covertly blue.
So this is the reason I'm sharing this. First off, we'd love to hear your thoughts on this, folks, especially if you're a medical professional. Also want to hear, this is very important, if you think we should do an episode on supplements. I'm super into it.
Yeah.
We may get some feedback. But I think it's okay to come for supplements because it's a very widely unregulated industry. A lot of times people get in miserable situations because they have been bilked by a bad faith actor.
Well, you know, what's interesting too is I have a dear friend who is a lifelong vegan and later in life has started to run into some health issues.
The B12 will do it.
Mm-hmm, yeah. Because, you know, there's something called like a sugar vegan. They eat a lot of tofu and things like that. A lot of starchy kind of things,
French fry vegans, I've heard of them.
That's also a thing. And apparently over time, it can really affect things like bone density.
Wow.
It can really affect your health and problems can emerge despite your best efforts to live a quote unquote healthier lifestyle. So I think that really ties into what you're talking about, Ben, with supplements, where I think, you know, people take them not out of like snake oil superstition. Most of the time they're trying to just have a more balanced diet, but there can be issues that arise. And I think the marketing behind it and the math and the science behind it, probably very much worth an exploration.
Isn't there something with supplements like that too, that your body doesn't metabolize?
Depending upon the body or on the substance? Depending upon the delivery method of the substance.
Yeah, because you have to have other things in your like system to break down certain supplements.
Solubility or something like that. Yeah.
It's so much more complicated than take a pill.
To be very crass about it, one example dirty, don't do drugs, kids example is the reason that people insulflate cocaine, right?
Instead, what is that?
Snort.
Okay.
Knows. Instead of
you
like,
can't smoke it because it's not soluble. Or
you can't like swallow it.
You can't swallow it.
It won't do anything.
Yeah, whatever.
Yeah.
Like that's the reason crack is a thing, because cocaine in its form, powder form, cannot be smoked. So it has to be bound with whatever, baking soda, whatever. I don't know how they make crack, but there is a reason that that is smokable versus the kind that has to be either injected or insulfated.
Insulfated, not lated. Okay, yeah. And so the important thing here that we're saying, folks, that you need to understand, and a lot of chemists will confirm this, potassium is basically the cocaine of the chemical.
Isn't the term bioavailability?
Bioavailability is part of it, yeah. But like the argument, as crass as it is, the example, the analogy holds because of that method of delivery and digestion is key. And a lot of over-the-counter supplements
don't take that into account.
They don't.
Or at very least don't share with you the details.
And also, of course, this is not a ding on anybody who has been taking a supplement and felt really strongly about it and then found the science wasn't there. There are no such thing, really, as stupid people. And people are given the opportunity to access information and digest it, perhaps dependent upon the method of delivery as well, then they're going to amaze you because people are pretty smart.
I think that's very magnanimous of you, Ben. I would have to disagree. I think there are such a thing as stupid people. But I do think your point holds true, that it is about education. And most people, when given the opportunity to educate themselves, will do so.
That's what I'm saying.
Yes.
Yeah. Like maybe we're looking at, again. Like
I'm being a jerk. I'm just saying, you're absolutely spot on.
So let us know your favorite supplement conspiracies, whether they're pro a certain supplement, anti a certain supplement, and if so, why? Looking forward to those emails for sure. You will probably end up in the show because we're hoping people have a lot of opinions on these. Luckily, we ended with some beans and some spinach and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Can I just add really quick? Yeah, there is a sort of maybe not a fad diet, but there is a type of diet called a low potassium diet. Mm. So there also might be health reasons
because of the health
for
conditions,
individuals,
which is why the supplements have to be below a certain amount. So maybe it's a thing where
otherwise it could like kill you or something.
Not solving it for everybody. Right. Shout out to, of course, the overdoses that Scientology makes people take. Right. The niacin.
Yeah. But again, guys, I think in the end, this is just a sodium conspiracy. It's big sodium.
Big salts.
Big salt.
Let's take them on.
Speaking of, there's while we're girding ourselves for supplement war, speaking of big salt, there's one last thing I wanted to share here. So you still got a little time, which is a letter from a guy we're going to call Big Shucks. Big Shucks, to be clear, did not choose the name. We're giving that to you. It is our gift to you, Big Shucks. And Big Shucks said the following: I, Big Shucks, henceforward with this declaration, irrevocably and perpetually grant thee my unqualified assent, save for express stipulations to the contrary hereinafter provided, to peruse audibly all compositions I direct unto thee.
Okay, so this is permission?
This is permission, but here's the thing he really said. I just like the way he wrote that, Big Shucks.
Okay.
Big Shuck says, just got to say, fellas, everyone will love this topic. A good one to try and get new viewers on. Keep up the good work, my friends. Keep it weird out there. Also, do more weird shit on China. There's a ton out there all the time, and it's fucking weird and fascinating. We're just putting some bleeps in there, but folks, you can tell if you're playing along at home.
Passionate.
Yeah, what Big Shucks means. This is the news. I thought this was a great one to end on. There is apparently a new drug that is going to extend the life of dogs, and there's another one that will extend the life of cats. So this is one for the animal lovers. Please, of course, always send your pet pictures or your quesadilla pictures, conspiracydieheartradio.com. I think this is kind of good news, unless you hate your dog or your cat.
I think this is amazing news.
I mean, I sometimes hate my cat. I think we've all been there. Cats are kind of a-holes sometimes.
Give me your cat.
I thought you were talking about your
cat.
Specifically about your cat. Like,
no,
someone's shrugging and they're like, yeah.
Your cats are probably great. They can be kind of jerks. They're agents of chaos.
I'll take them.
Matt, it's a love-hate thing. It's fine. It's natural.
So here's the thing, too. This medicine has been developed, the one for dogs, it's been developed by a veterinary biotech company called Loyal for Dogs. This is coming to us from Science Alert by Carly Casella from December of last year. So it still has to go through clinical trials, but it appears to be on the way. The FDA has formally accepted this drug for development, and they believe this thing, which is called LOY-001, they believe this can be given to dogs as an injection every 3 to 6 months by vets. Once the dogs are 7 years of age or older, as long as they weigh at least 40 pounds, it may, especially with larger breeds, help them live much longer. Because, you know, that's the heartbreaking thing about a large dog breed. Like Great Danes, Irish Wolfhounds, They burn bright, but briefly.
Yeah. Well, and I don't think it's directly proportional to their size and weight when you go down all the way, but it is like smaller dogs live quite a long time, right?
Yeah. If you hate Chihuahuas, that's bad news. Because yeah. Those little guys will stick around forever. You know what I mean?
It's all the humping. You know, he's got a lot of exercise. Yeah.
No, but it's really
it's all the shivering. It's a continual workout.
But there's just so little body to, you know, fuel for so long. And then you have those big animals. I've got medium dogs. I wonder what the actual life expectancy is.
What's Charlie? Is Charlie a big dog or a medium dog?
Charlie?
Yeah, my dog.
Charlie's medium.
Medium, yeah.
Charlie's medium.
Also, check out a Brain Stuff video I did years ago on the dog human age thing. It's not a 1-to-7 ratio all the time. It does. Yeah. It evolves and it changes. But there's another question here, which I think Big Shucks probably also appreciates. Is it so much about the extension of the lifespan, or is it about the extension of the good parts of the lifespan?
Yes.
Humans are running into that right now. Dennis Leary had a great bit on it years ago where he said, look, yes, you could live to 150 or whatever if you're human one day in the future. But would you want to if the next 50 years just sort of suck?
Coming up to you after you give a speech to a bunch of people about how you want to still be the president. Sorry.
Low blow.
We should put that. Okay,
we should delete that.
No, we talk trash on both sides of the aisle. That's how we roll.
I've said it before. I strongly believe there should be age limits to high political offices.
Jon Stewart had a joke. Did you see him go back on The Daily Show?
I've seen a little clips here and there, yeah, but I haven't seen
He zoomed in on his face.
What do you say? This year we will break mm-hmm. the record for the two oldest candidates running for president, and they're breaking the record that they set last election.
Yeah, it's terrible. That's something to let us know about too, folks. Like, honestly, if you want to be a centenarian comptroller, fine. Go with God. But if you want to be like president or maybe on SCOTUS, I don't think it's ageist. I don't think it's a hot take to say you should be somewhat representative of the population that you purport to represent.
Wouldn't it be smart to age out of a public position like that to where the next generation that's in line would have representation?
Frankly, I think it's by design to keep that next generation from gaining that representation for as long as humanly possible. That's it's the same with justices and stuff, you know?
That's a big part of it. There's also in theory, we're saying there's a certain amount of time needed to accumulate the experience, the networks and the expertise, but that's clearly not always true. You know, I think there's an ulterior motive, and I think that's what you're getting at.
I think so, yeah. I mean, again, I'm not saying that's what the founding fathers necessarily had in mind, but it doesn't feel like our founding documents are very focused on bringing new ideas into the mix.
Founding fathers would be horrified by almost everything. Like,
they did mean for it to be more malleable than we have allowed it to be, I would argue.
Yeah. But they would they'd be freaking out about television, let alone space.
Oh, that's true.
They'd
that's
be like, Velcro is insane, right?
That's witchcraft. Hilarious. Yes. You guys, can we do that next video shoot? It's we're founding fathers, and we're just freaked horrified out by everything.
That's I think about that, though, with time travelers. Like, you know, we always talk about, I think it's kind of like a dumb question to say how someone would fare if they went centuries back into the past. The answer for the vast majority of humanity is not very well at all.
Connecticut Yankee's a good example of that in fiction. Wasn't that Twain?
Yes, that's Twain. But the idea of people traveling forward in time is much more interesting to me because it gives us a fun opportunity to question our assumptions about the past. Like, we don't know what would amaze Thomas Jefferson. He'd probably have some complicated takes that didn't age well.
Maybe you think?
Then, you know, think about, like, if you had never heard of things that we take for granted, how amazed would you be when you see them? Like, we don't know what would amaze time travelers. I don't know how I got here from potassium, but
time, that's how.
There it is, time.
Well, I mean, you know, it makes me think of Back to the Future 2, which I think, you know, one handles the past and two handles the future. And I honestly think they did a pretty dang good job of presenting these kind of futuristic things, some of which have very much come to pass. But at the time,
Marty McFly is us, you know, and he is like experiencing all this crazy stuff. He's blown away. There's that thing where there's the giant 3D shark, mm-hmm. and he goes, the shark still looks fake. You know, as much as things change, they stay the same as well.
I mean, yeah, let's make that video, because think about other things. Like we're saying yes, space, yes, nuclear weapons, and all
we're saying yes, nuclear weapons.
They're like, these are things that would naturally amaze any person who hadn't heard of them before. But I think it's simpler stuff. I think it's the fact that you can buy oranges year round. It would be like, this is fucking astonishing, but devilish.
This is against the laws of nature.
This is against the laws of nature. Let us know, folks, what you think the strangest thing would be for people traveling to the future. No holds barred. Give us your honest opinions. I think gasoline would be up there.
Sure.
I think maybe the way socks have changed would be a big one for him, because they were super into leggings, you know?
Oh, yeah. I mean, now the closest thing we had to that, I guess, are just high socks. Well, mm-hmm. leggings are still a thing, but, you know, gentlemen mm-hmm. don't typically wear them.
Mm-hmm.
They can.
Wigs are way less popular.
It depends. Or their
demographic.
Yeah, they're more of like a outlandish fashion choice, mm-hmm. you know, as opposed mm-hmm. to like the norm.
Did I tell you I was talking with some French people about one of our shows, Ridiculous History, and I was saying how much I enjoyed an episode about why British lawyers and former colonial officials, or officials from former colonial places, wear those wigs called perukes.
To hide their scabies or something, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's very dirty stuff. And then it was so weird, because these very nice French people that I hung out with and had a karaoke adventure with in Paris.
Just encountered in the wild and just became pals? Oh, I love strangers. Yeah, me too, man.
But they very diplomatically, they were like, you know, perruque is just the word for wig in French. And I was like, why? It's not a special word? And they're like, I'm sure the episode is very good. I would love to listen to it.
But that's a great example of appropriating the language of other cultures and just making it like a new American word that means the thing.
Yeah,
we see it all the time. Like filet, you mm-hmm. know, is just a French word that means like a certain size of a cut of meat, or a cut mm-hmm. of meat. Mm-hmm. But we refer to it specifically as like a filet mignon.
That reminds me of the Italian scaloppini.
Mm-hmm.
It's just fun to say scaloppini.
Yeah, exactly.
Guys, I've got a pitch for the video. So it's an intro that's too long, you know, like SNL style, kind of back in the day.
Yeah, like cold opens.
Like a Cure song.
No, but like the intro to like a TV show or something. It's way too long. It tells you exactly what's going on.
Oh,
it feels like
it.
A 90s, sitcom. Like 80s sitcom.
Mr. Belvedere, The Nanny.
And so the actual content of each episode or each
very,
moment,
very small.
Super short.
Yeah.
And it's like a very simple thing, like somebody, whatever, eating an orange, and it's clearly winter or mm-hmm. wherever, and it just cuts to them, and they're just screaming and terrified, like
that's flushing toilets.
Yeah.
That's another big
one. Like this very much. I fear we've given away the game, but now you guys just have to wait and see how we pull it off. / if we pull it off.
And you don't have to sit and wait in hushed, frightened silence for our attempts at sketch comedy. You can join your compatriots, Iron Man, Big Shuck, Sergeant Will, and the Cold War Hammer and more to become part of the show. Let us know your thoughts. Let us know what you think about Sergeant Will's fascinating Star Wars theory. Let us know what you think about the Russian weapons and the calculus behind them. Please. Help us explore the very many supplement conspiracies. Like, literally, think of whatever it is that you have taken that you think works, or you saw someone take it and you think it's utter bunk or indeed conspiratorial. Tell us, send us pictures of your cats, dogs. We try to be easy to find online.
Correct. You can find us at the handle Conspiracy Stuff, where we exist on Facebook. The aforementioned YouTube, where we do have those attempts at sketch comedy rolling out every single week, as well as X, FKA Twitter. If you'd like to find us on Instagram and TikTok, we are the handle Conspiracy Stuff Show. But wait, there's more.
Do you have a telephonic device? Do you like to use it to call people?
I was a founding father. Sorry.
There you go. Like a boomer. Call us. Our number is 1-833-STDWYTK. When you call in, It is a voicemail, so you've got 3 minutes. Give yourself a cool nickname and let us know if we can use your name and message on the air. If you've got more to
say. What is this apparition speaking words back to me through this cylindrical device?
Chill out, Hamilton. Okay, we're good. He was a founding father, right?
Yeah, more or less.
I mean, Central Bank, Federal Reserve, all that. Yeah, I think we're... Okay. Why not instead send us an email?
It's one of the best ways to get in contact with us 24 hours a day, 7 days a week as the humans reckon time. Love it, love it, love it, because we can go back to what you have written. You can send us links. You can send us pictures, perhaps of your pets. And we read every single email we get where we are. Conspiracy@iHeartRadio.com.
Stuff They Don't Want You to Know is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold-Blooded, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern. Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one case, but almost a dozen. Listen to Cold-Blooded, the Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi guys, Nancy Grace here, host of podcast Crime Stories with Nancy Grace. I've dedicated my life to fighting crime and helping crime victims. For a decade, I prosecuted violent felonies. Every day is a mission. Every day is a chance to stop crime and keep one more person safe. Listen to Crime Stories with Nancy Grace on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.